Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Kara Hetland, and tonight at 8 Central, 8 o'clock Central, 7 Mountain, SDPB TV premieres Immigration Battle. It's a special two-hour feature film presented by Frontline and Independent Lens. Acclaimed independent filmmakers Sherry Robertson and Michael Camerini take viewers behind closed doors in Washington's corridors of power to explore the political realities surrounding one of the country's most pressing and divisive issues, immigration. In Immigration Battle, they reveal the untold story of the push for bipartisan immigration reform after President Obama's reelection, gaining rare access to Democrats and Republicans throughout 2013 and 2014 as they secretly worked across the aisle to try and make a comprehensive bill a reality. The film is a fly-on-the-wall look at the high-stakes effort to broker a deal in Congress, an effort led by Democratic Representative
Luis Gutierrez,
thank you, Ryan, of Illinois. SDPB's Steve Zwemke visited with filmmaker Sherry Robertson yesterday to learn more about Immigration Battle.
Sherry Robertson, thank you for joining us on Dakota Midday. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
It's my pleasure.
You've been working with fellow filmmaker Michael Camerini covering the immigration debate in Washington and other parts of the country. How long have you been following this story?
You know, we had no idea it would happen this way, but we started in 2001 under the impression that a bill was about to pass in Washington and that we'd be done in a year. And we haven't managed to get away from it ever since. So 15 years.
Is that due in part to 9/11?
9/11 was a huge factor. When we started in the summer of 2001, things were moving so quickly. The White House and the Senate together were in concert, and it was certainly feasible that a bill would have passed in that Congress. But 9/11 slowed things down, and then they continued to slow down, and the politics have grown ever more complicated.
Looking at your new film, Frontline's Immigration Battle, Congressman Luis Gutierrez of Illinois is featured prominently. It appears that Congressman Gutierrez, a Democrat, has been able to work with Republicans in the past. Can you tell us about the Group of Eight, how that began, and does it even exist at this time?
Well, there was a Group of Eight in the Senate that managed to get a bill passed in the spring of 2013, and there was a Group of Eight in the House who was working away, but got a lot of interference, basically from Democratic leaders in the White House. And they essentially dissolved by fall of that year. So, no, there is no Group of Eight, and there is no formal process that I know of now. The story that we cover is a more informal and secret process that took place after the Group of Eight went to pieces.
Right. Getting away from that for a second and bringing us up to current time, with the House leadership in such a gray area, what effect is that having on moving forward with an immigration plan, or is it completely on the back burner at this time?
You know, I think both the upheaval in the House leadership and the presidential campaigns are really creating a stifling effect for conversations about immigration reform. I would be very surprised if anything happened until we have a new president. But it's not as if the will isn't there if the political moment can be ripe.
You mentioned the presidential election coming up in 2016. Donald Trump and others have brought immigration to near the top of their campaign platforms. How big is immigration in the 2016 election? And is there a candidate or party with the most to gain as it's debated for the next year?
Well, we've always seen that immigration reform isn't going to pass until there's a way for both parties to benefit from it. But I would say the candidate who's got the longest track record with it really is probably Jeb Bush. He's been a supporter through thick and thin. Marco Rubio also was instrumental in the Senate bill passing, but he sort of blows hot and cold. The folks who vote are going to make the biggest difference. You know, there's a portion of the country, a relatively small one, under 25%, who are really opposed to immigration and immigration reform. Surprisingly, among both Democrats and Republicans, almost 75% support it and want there to be a legislated solution to the millions of people who are living here without legal status and to the immigration system going forward. They want a modern system. But as long as the 25% are the loudest and getting the most attention, you know, it seems like we're going to wait.
I want to come back to the thing you were mentioning about the film Immigration Battle in just a second here, and that's how really almost like covert some of these discussions were. A couple of quick questions. First of all, though, one of the arguments against the president's attempts to reform immigration is that the Democrats want to flood voter registrations in their favor. Do you have any thoughts on that either way?
You know, there have been many, many attempts to find these phantom voters who are illegal. And they never, you know, they maybe turn up one or two unauthorized voters in a given election in a particular region. But it doesn't actually happen. There's a great fear of it, and it certainly would be a bad thing if it did happen, but it doesn't.
Getting back to what we were talking about now in your film, I was amused at how Congressman Gutierrez made the comment that working with Republicans and sneaking around on his own party was like having an affair. Now, these alliances apparently were that covert. Why was Gutierrez finding difficulties working with his own party at this time? And again, this is back a couple of years as we're talking right now, back about 2013. But is that how you found it too? Was it almost like they were having an affair at times?
Oh, it absolutely was, because immigration is such a potent political issue, as you had just referenced. It's often more useful to party leadership or party strategists to use it against the other side than it is to try to actually solve it. It would then be off the table, and you'd have given away one of your major chits. So Gutierrez had a huge suspicion of his own party and their willingness to move on immigration. He even frequently mentioned that, you know, they had held the White House and the House of Representatives and the Senate all together for 4 years, and they never did a thing about immigration. So he felt like, okay, it's not as easy with Republicans in control, but if they want to do it, I'm certainly going to try to help.
Yeah. Well, that's another question I had. You know, did the Democrats just totally miss their window to advance reform prior to 2010 when they did have majorities in both houses?
Well, you could probably argue that both ways. I mean, they didn't take it up, and it had been a campaign promise, and that was a huge disappointment. But on the other hand, had it not been a compromise that both parties could accept, it probably wouldn't have stuck. I mean, we see what happened with the health care plans. They've had a very, very hard time because it was entirely a Democratic initiative, and it passed with Democratic, pretty much only Democratic votes. Mm-hmm. So that's not really the best way to get things done if you plan for them to be permanent. And immigration is such a huge issue, such a contentious issue, and so central to Americans. The best way to do it is with everybody reaching a compromise.
In Immigration Battle, coming up on Frontline Tuesday night, a couple of years ago, Representative Gutierrez was quite hopeful of working with Republicans like Paul Ryan of Wisconsin and Trey Gowdy of South Carolina, who both serve with him in the House. Are those relationships totally broken right now?
You know, I don't get that impression at all. I think the way things appear from the outside is often you know, shaped for public consumption. and it's not always for the widest possible public consumption. But I don't think the relationships have likely changed. It's just they're not going to fight a battle they can't win. And if the time is not ripe, then they're not going to start now.
It's very interesting as you and Michael Camerini follow Representative Gutierrez as well as some other members of Congress and their officials as well throughout Immigration Battle. And the one thing we see is Congressman Gutierrez's frustration of not getting a vote in the House. Is this any different from other partisan issues like the Keystone XL pipeline? Is this just not business as usual in Washington? Were his expectations too high?
Well, he hoped that because this issue was so important and because it had played such a big factor in the 2012 elections, it might be different, but you're exactly right. This is the dynamic that has dogged Congress for the last 4 or 6 years. The structure where Republicans hold a majority, but they have a very, very divided caucus, so that the thing they like to do, which is only introduce legislation if a majority of the Republican caucus supports it, is much more difficult with such a division. And in order to pass a bill, the majority of the caucus in that Congress was only 118 votes. That wasn't enough to pass a bill. So they would still need Democrats mm-hmm. to vote for it as well. And that's why they needed to deal with Luis Gutierrez. He was as important to them as they were to him.
Yeah. A major argument for reform is to keep families together and avoid deportation. Where is the balance between enforcing laws on the books and protecting the family unit? Representative Trey Gowdy asked a similar question to Homeland Secretary Jay Johnson in the film. Can we tell where that line is right now?
Well, I think the line does vary depending on where you're looking at it from, for sure. But there are a lot of reasons that an improved immigration system would help this country, and they go well beyond families and individual individual experiences. I mean, the economic competitiveness of the United States in a global system is being harmed tremendously by our current immigration system, and for Republicans who support it, that's one of the major incentives. From the individual level, though, there is a crisis of families being torn apart. And I believe the Obama administration has made moves to reorganize their priorities in terms of who gets deported well within the purview of the administration. But I think they have tried to loosen up on that a little bit since the possibility of legislation has pretty much disappeared. As long as there was a possibility that the House might pass a bill, the White House didn't want to give them an excuse not to by not enforcing the law.
We're visiting with Sherry Robertson, filmmaker of Immigration Battle, along with Michael Camerini, and it's coming up Tuesday night on Frontline on SDPB-TV. Sherry, a couple of other congressmen were introduced to in your film, both Republicans, Mike Mulvaney of South Carolina and Carlos Diaz-Balart of Florida, had been in talks with Luis Gutierrez and seemed really serious about working with him to a successful bill. Like I said, they appeared serious in getting something done. Do they have some political gain here? What would that be?
Well, there are a lot of Republicans who feel like this is an issue they'd love to take care of. They'd love to take care of it for the positive reasons that it could really help the country in a number of ways, as we said. But they'd also like to take care of it to get it off the table,
mm-hmm.
because it's a real political problem to always get mired in discussion of immigration when their constituents are so very divided over it. It's a huge issue in Republican primaries, far less an issue that people vote on in general elections, but for primary voters, it tends to be, among the top three. So they'd really like to get this taken care of.
Yeah.
And I think the sort of intellectual wing of the Republican Party, the more mainstream leadership, has been very clear since way back when we first started filming that, demographically, as Congressman Mulvaney says in the show, they are going to have to reach a larger percentage of mm-hmm. the American public, or they're not going to be able to win elections.
When you talk about getting things off the table in Congress, we've all seen the polls about what people think or what their approval level is of our Congress right now. And, mostly those polls are 60 to 70% negative. Is it because things are on the table so long, more so than maybe just the partisan part of it? Somebody's for or against. Is it because some of these things just take so long to hash out?
Well, they do take a long time to hash out, but, lately nothing's been getting hashed out. If you look at what legislation has actually passed,
mm-hmm.
both Senate and House, it's been precious little in the last couple of Congresses. It's really reached an all-time low. So people have a reason to be disgusted. On the other hand, though, when we go to town halls with congressmen, and we go with Democrats and Republicans all over the country, a lot of constituents tell them, I don't want you to go up there and compromise. I want you to represent me and only me, and, you know, I want you to win. Well, you can't reach the point of legislating if you can't compromise. And with primaries for representatives every 2 years, you know, they don't have much time to do any compromising before they're up for another primary. Mm-hmm.
The president, after the next election, is a lame duck. Does that bring the possibility of an executive action closer?
Well, the likelihood that his executive action from last November will be decided in the courts is even in question at this point. This very week, by October 23rd, the Fifth Circuit Court that is now holding their decision on whether they will allow it to go forward must rule in order for, if they rule negatively, in order for an appeal to go to the Supreme Court this year. If it doesn't go to the Supreme Court this year, it will be tied up in the courts all the way through the end of Obama's term. So it's not very likely that a new executive action will come along until this one is resolved, and it's very unclear what's going to happen with it. There are lots of administrative remedies, though, that are at the disposal of the administration even now in terms of priorities for prosecution. And, you know, that's about the only avenue that's left open.
Mm-hmm. Congressman Gutierrez put the GOP majority on the clock in 2014, and when July 4th of last year passed, he changed gears and had a plan B. Was the president's executive action his plan B, or what in fact was his plan B?
That's exactly right. It was the executive action. He had, everybody understood that if President Obama took executive action, that would be the end of any effort at legislation. The Republicans would rebel. So the White House wanted to hold off on that as long as they possibly could. But Congressman Gutierrez felt like, okay, while you're holding off, you know, families are being torn apart every day. And so he wanted to keep both tracks moving at once through the spring of 2014. When they got to the end of the track for legislation due to utterly unforeseen coincidences, then what he had left was what we call his plan B, which was executive action.
Congressman Mulvaney of South Carolina blamed the meltdown at the southwest border as one of the reasons Republicans backed off from the talks with respect to this issue. And people may remember news of buses being turned around and turned back. What ignited the influx of crossings at that time, and why was the response of American citizens more reactive than usual?
Well, you know, I think that let me start with the second question. I think the framing of what was happening at the southwest border by the media was not as a refugee crisis, which it certainly qualified as being, but as an illegal immigration overrun. So, and people were responding to that interpretation. I think once they understood more about what the push factors were for the kids, mostly little kids arriving, it became a more nuanced interpretation. But there was a kind of media frenzy that built up from mid-June to about mid-July of last summer that was hard to overcome. Why did it happen? Well, you know, that is one of the most violent places in the world, and there's every reason to fear for your family if you live there. But there are also criminal gangs exploiting the very situation and making a business out of forcing people to pay to be trafficked into the United States.
You've already answered part of this question in dealing with economic matters. Is there a chance everyone can come out of the immigration battle a winner? If not, who wins and who loses?
Well, the largest economic argument against immigration reform is that the American worker will not come out ahead. But experts say that it's this black economy supported by undocumented workers that brings down wages for everybody. And there is pretty airtight documentation of that. I don't know that anybody really loses by a reformed immigration system. Certainly, the United States in aggregate would benefit because we're not taking advantage of the investment we make in a lot of people. We know when bright people from overseas come here and go to college and work a few years in a corporation and then must leave the country, we're just giving away an investment. So in that sense, we'd be much better off, and studies document how many jobs people like that do create. But also, at the more entry-level side, the fact that there are people willing and able to take lower-skilled work, you know, cleaning and gardening and picking food and so forth, allows other Americans to do other things. And those are jobs. There are some jobs Americans really don't seem to want to take. I've talked to peach farmers all over the Southeast who can't get Americans to come and work for them.
Finally, the president, and this piece is shown at the end of the immigration battle on Frontline, and I'm sure a lot of people have seen this. The president said, "We are and always will be a nation of immigrants." Have we lost the assimilation that we enjoyed as a country in the last century? Is it still there, or are we somehow getting in the way of that assimilation as a country?
That is such a good question. I think we've made it much harder. You know, the whole issue of whether someone is legal or illegal creates a barrier to assimilation that has certainly kept some people from being able to learn what they need to learn English in many cases. I know women who are afraid to go grocery shopping because, you know, if they run a stop sign or something, they really run a risk of being deported and not seeing their kids again for decades. That is not a situation where people can easily assimilate. There's too much fear. But are we still a nation of immigrants? I would say we are. I know too many first-generation high achievers not to believe that if you're parents come in and clean houses, you may well graduate from college and start a business.
Thank you. Shiri Robertson has been our guest on Dakota Midday. Shiri Robertson, along with Michael Camerini, have produced Immigration Battle, and you can see it Tuesday night on SDPB on Frontline. Shiri, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure visiting with you.
Well, thank you. It has for me, too.
SDPB's Steve Zwemke speaking with Shiri Robertson, and again, you can see Immigration Battle tonight on SDPB TV at 8 o'clock Central, 7 o'clock Mountain.